The Known from the Unknown by Vainglorious, read by CookieMom6067. Ronan Dex's entire squad ends up in the hospital for nearly a week after their surprise battle with the Wraith on what was supposed to be a simple trade mission. The only person who really needs to stay there that long is the runner, who took a beating the scrawny little guy probably shouldn't have survived. Satidans are made of sturdier stuff, and also none of them started a fistfight with the Wraith. Shepard stays in the hospital the longest. Now, normally, Ronan has a foolproof plan for getting released before the doctors say he can go. He just points out to some low-level orderly or nursing assistant that his name is the same as the doctor who's treating him, so of course he can leave. The trick is to do this when Milena's not actually on call, so no one can ask her. And when she gets home and is irritated, although at this point no longer surprised, to find him sacked out in their bed instead of a hospital gurney, she's not going to send him back unless he's bleeding to death. She wants him home just as much as he wants to not be in the hospital anymore, and the part where she threatens to have him chained to his gurney next time isn't very sincere. Although, now he knows she's not totally joking, because that's not a far cry from what she did to John Shepard to keep him in his gurney. Except that Shepard deserves it, because he ruins Ronan's escape route this time, and keeps them both in the stupid, boring, smelly hospital for way longer than necessary. Shepard doesn't like hospitals any more than Ronan does. Not for the same reasons, though. Ronan just gets bored and restless immediately, and doesn't see the point of staying in one when he can go home and lie around in pain just as effectively in his own bed. With his wife, the doctor, who will probably keep him from dying if he pops a particularly important stitch holding his guts together. Ronan hazards a guess that the reason Shepard hates the hospital so much is all the time he spent here when he first arrived on Satida. It makes sense, and Shepard probably doesn't like thinking about back then. That's Ronan's opinion, and not what Shepard actually has to say. "Even your hospitals are like bondage dungeons," the runner snaps at him, trying futilely to get the cardiac monitor off his chest. "Seriously!" After one night and one day, he's expressed this one opinion about 14 times without explaining how it's different from a typical dungeon. Across the room in his own gurney, not actually tied to anything except an IV full of happy juice, Ronan just ignores him. The more Shepard fights, the more the med staff is going to make him miserable. That's got to be true about every culture's doctors. Ronan opens his mouth to ask, but pauses and then doesn't. Shepard will share if and when he wants to. "Hey, Nurse Ratchet," Shepard calls to someone passing the door in the hallway. A junior nurse walks in, but Ronan knows that isn't her name. She peers at Shepard, clearly recognizing the handiwork of her colleagues designed to keep him in bed and in place, and raises an eyebrow. "Please," is all Shepard says, wiggling as much as he can. When she doesn't react, he tries another tactic. "Look," he begins, "I live with a doctor, Milena Dex. She said I could go home." Ronan hears that lie and sits up so sharply his abused stomach muscles start screaming in pain. Unfortunately, it's too late because the junior nurse is already using the staff transceiver on her belt to call Milena, and Shepard has just ruined everything. "Idiot!" Ronan hisses at Shepard, who just looks at him innocently. "What?" Shepard demands. Ronan shakes his head. If the guy weren't being held together with sutures and stubbornness, he'd whack him one. Milena arrives minutes later, and she immediately looks amused. "This one yours?" the junior nurse asks. Milena nods. "Yeah," she says. "He's mine. Hi, John." "Yo," Shepard mutters, chin up petulantly as he leans back against his pillow. "He's not going anywhere," Milena tells the junior nurse, who nods knowingly. "Oh," Milena continues, jerking a thumb towards Ronan's gurney as half of her mouth curls upwards. "That one's mine, too. And he's not going anywhere, either." Ronan can't control the scowl that crosses his face. "I'll make sure the ward staff know," the junior nurse promises. "Thanks," says Milena. She follows the woman out of their room without another word to either man, eyes sparkling in a way that means she finds this hilarious. Ronan waits until he can no longer hear their footsteps clicking against the floor. Then, not caring how much it makes his back and shoulder throb, Ronan leans forward, jerks his pillow out from behind his head, and hurls it hard at Shepard. His aim is true, and it lands solidly across Shepard's neck and chest. For a second, Shepard is silent. Then he actually moans, and it sounds like genuine pain. Ow! Shut up, Ronan says, slouching back down on the bed. Ronan still gets out of the hospital sooner than Shepard. He doesn't even have to use husbandly persuasion because Kel wants him at a debriefing with the chieftain on how a peaceful trade mission ended in a full-blown confrontation with the Wraith and unauthorized detonation of an isotopic pulse cannon missile. Abruptly, staying in the stupid hospital is almost appealing, except it's still boring and pointless, and now he doesn't have a pillow because Shepard won't give his back. The debriefing is just as dumb as Ronan expects. Kel clearly doesn't want to be there any more than Ronan does. The great old bearded chieftain and his counselors ask pointless questions, and Ronan answers them more or less honestly. The rest of his squad, minus Shepard, sits around the table silently and looks bored and a little uncomfortable. Ronan doesn't think it's hard to understand. It became a combat mission because the Wraith showed up. Fortunately, no one asks him why the Wraith were there. The word Wraithbringer doesn't come up. Also, no one will explain to him why they brought an isotopic pulse cannon missile along on a mission if they're not allowed to use it without permission. They were going to give it to villagers, who more than likely would have tied a goat to it rather than actually figure out how to use it. Ara blew a hive out of the sky, and Ronan doesn't see how that could be a bad thing. He half wonders if Ara just took it from the armory because she wanted to, but he's not going to accuse her of that in front of the chieftain. Eventually, Ronan figures out that the chieftain is concerned that somehow, someone on that planet is going to tell the Wraith that the people with the weapons capable of taking out Hive ships are Satidans. "We destroyed the Hive," he says very clearly. "There's no one to tell." The villagers were also a little distracted, but he's not going to mention that, or else Kel is going to want to know what in the hell was going to make them focus on anything but five Satidan soldiers battling the Wraith. "The runner you picked up last year," the chieftain says finally. "He knows about the weapon." Ronan isn't sure Shepard does, actually. "He was severely injured before we used it," he says, which is true, "and he's not a security risk. This man came from a planet that used ancestor technology," Kel announces. "It's possible he's aware of many weapons successful against the Wraith." "His world was destroyed," Ronan points out. Shepard hasn't said more than three words about where he came from, but it's obvious that whatever weapons they had weren't successful. "Has he spoken of ancestor technology?" the chieftain asks, and he looks interested. "No." The chieftain leans back in his chair, knitting his fingers on the tabletop. "Perhaps he should be asked." Kel visits Shepard in the hospital shortly after that. It takes a week or so because the doctors say Shepard's not up to talking. Ronan didn't even tell Melina to say that. She must have guessed. Kel goes alone, and Ronan finds himself irrationally worried about the meeting. It's doubtful that Shepard will have any information for them, and he also knows better than to mention anything that happened on this last mission. The conversation won't be productive, and that could really piss Kel off. But Kel doesn't look particularly upset when he emerges from Shepard's room. He doesn't look happy, though, either. Ronan glances at him curiously from his seat in the hallway, and Kel stops for a second. "He says no ancestor technology survived," Kel tells him. Ronan nods, not surprised. He remembers vaguely the few images he got to see of Shepard's world. "But he does have knowledge," Kel continues, starting to walk again. "It may help us." Ronan goes in to check on Shepard after that. The patient looks much less green, though still hopelessly tangled in various pieces of medical equipment. "Hey," Ronan says, arriving at Shepard's bedside. "Hey," Shepard replies. He doesn't look upset by whatever Kel asked him. "How'd it go?" Ronan asks. Shepard shrugs, a slight movement that still looks stiff and painful. "I'm not a scientist," he says, eyes on the tufts of his blanket. "I don't know shit about what he wants to know." Ronan nods, a little relieved that Kel accepted that response. "The taskmaster's been interested in the topic since Shepard arrived." "Yeah." Shepard looks up, eyes hopeful. "Can I go home now?" Milena has some kind of doctor meeting all day, so Ronan nods. "Yeah," he says, and starts undoing the nearest straps connecting Shepard to the machines. Everyone's out of the hospital, but Ronan's entire unit is still banged up enough that they're not heading out into the field anytime soon. So Kel schedules about 40,000 meetings with other master specialists to go over Wraith intel. Ronan almost asks Shepard if he can come up with another planet that thinks he's a Wraithbringer so they can go there, but eventually decides that Shepard won't think the question is even a little bit funny. Shepard's under Milena's orders to stay home and recover. She won't even let him out to do practice flights at the training barracks. Ronan's not sure who's more bored. The intel meetings are long and repetitive, but Shepard's locked up in the house with Milena in her meanest doctor mode. One day, while Milena's saying goodbye to Ronan in the front doorway, Shepard tries to sneak out the back, stupid horned flight helmet in hand. "Get back here, John," Milena hollers, her mouth so close to Ronan's ear that he jerks back and rubs it. Shepard skulks back into the house. He walks into the front room, puts his helmet on a side table, and crosses his arms. "I'm better," he tells them tightly. "I'm better, and I'm going out of my mind." Ronan feels for the guy. Milena's never been this much of a hard ass to Ronan. But then again, Ronan's never come home in that condition before. He makes a note not to. Milena only tilts her head. She takes one step toward Shepard, who's trying to stare her down. Ronan watches a little wary. His wife stretches out one slender finger and pokes it, lightly, into Shepard's stomach below his crossed arms. Shepard instantly turns white and actually doubles over in pain. He gasps twice, and Ronan almost thinks he's going to pass out. After a minute with difficulty, Shepard straightens up and drops his arms from their protective grasp around his middle. He turns around without a word, picks up his helmet, and stomps off toward his bedroom. The rest of the squad's occupied with the usual stand-down routine, like weapons recertification and physical fitness tests. They're not going to be allowed back in the field until Shepard can pass his, or at least cheat well enough to pass, and that looks a while off. The squad is taking turns dropping by Ronan's place while Milena's at work, partly because they're Shepard's friends, and partly to make sure he's actually staying there. Ronan has second thoughts about whether hanging out with Rakai is the best way for Shepard to heal, but figures if nothing else, parrying threats will keep Shepard entertained. It's almost like the first few months Shepard was in Ronan and Milena's home, except Shepard's a totally different man. For one, he likes them now, even with the way Milena's treating him. There's no trace of the wild and frantic, emaciated guy he was back then. The stubborn and the argumentative as hell parts of his personality are still firmly in place, though they're mostly directed at Milena now rather than Ronan. But there's also calmness and a centeredness that definitely wasn't there before. The runner has mastered pretty much every Satidan card game in the week since he came home from the hospital. He's also tried to teach them all some games from his home world, but it's hard because the cards don't match up exactly. He's numbered and drawn silly pictures on the Satidan ones to try to make them work, but it doesn't really. Most of Shepard's games revolve around lying and or randomly receiving the right cards. Ronan doesn't understand why that's fun. "It's fun because I win all your money," Shepard says. They're using dried salted sticks of Aruva meat as money because Shepard really likes it. In reality, Shepard has given every single one of his paychecks to Milena, just like Ronan does, from the day Kel officially made him part of the Satidan military. It isn't necessary, and it's about 10 times what they'd get if they tried to rent his room out, but Shepard has always just shrugged and said he has nothing to do with it. Ronan grunts while Shepard sweeps up the center pile of Aruva sticks and sticks one happily into his mouth. "Or," Shepard says, looking at Ronan's irritated expression, "I could take all your money and then punch you in the face, and we could call it Satidan poker." "Okay," says Hemi, and Ronan can see him making a fist under the table. "No," Milena says sharply from across the room, where she can't see Hemi's hands. She doesn't even have to look up from her book. One day, Ronan comes home from another endless intel meeting and finds Shepard reading a thin book in the living room. This is strange for one reason. The man can't read Satidin. Shepard puts down the book abruptly when Ronan walks in. It looks like he wants to shove it under a pillow or something. "Hey," Shepard says. Ronan glances at the thin pile of magazines lying on the cushion next to Shepard. They're a bunch of children's reading exercises. Ara's brother is a teacher, and she's been threatening since the beginning to make Shepard sit down with his class of six-year-olds and learn how to read and write. "Hey," is all Ronan says. "Ara came by," Shepard says, tipping his head at the papers. "If you people had television, I wouldn't have to do this." Shepard is awfully defensive about the topic. Ronan's guess is that his world didn't allow soldiers to read. It's not wholly uncommon across Pegasus, since soldiers that have access to information from sources other than their taskmasters sometimes get contrary ideas in their heads. They also can't write debriefing reports, which Ronan almost considers a decent trade-off. That's one thing Shepard can't, and doesn't do, too. "Or video games," Shepard continues. "I don't know how you can invent nuclear weapons, but not Pong." Shepard calls the isotopic pulse cannon missile a nuclear weapon or close enough, and Ronan has encouraged him to stop talking about it because it kills Wraith and he doesn't care beyond that. "Finally," Ronan tells Shepard. "I know how to read," the man retorts. And it's sort of true, Ronan thinks. Shepard can read street signs and train schedules, for the most part. Or he's memorized the routes he needs to take from Ronan and Milena's house to the market and the base, the two places he goes most frequently. And he manages at the market, too. But that might just be from recognizing what he wants to buy and pointing. He's got to understand prices and the symbols printed on the Chirica currency. Ronan doesn't argue, since Shepard would probably be willing to stay illiterate out of spite. Wandering into the kitchen and looking for a snack, Shepard follows him. "Rakai and Ara help themselves," he tells Ronan. "We're kind of out of food." "We can order some Elizakir," Ronan says. "Milena will pick it up on her way home." Shepard makes a face, even though Ronan knows he likes Elizakir. "I haven't eaten enough rats, and I had hamsters when I was a kid," Shepard mutters, mostly to himself. "Just because everything tastes good deep fried doesn't make it right." Ronan checks the cold cupboard, unsurprised to find it empty except for root vegetables. He offers Shepard a fulibi stem, and Shepard shakes his head. "Hamsters are fine," he says. They wash the fulibi roots together anyway, mostly because Milena will be much more willing to pick up something greasy and delicious if she can pretend their diet is even a little balanced. "So," Shepard says, flipping water droplets off the purple stems, "Rakai told me he's going to write my story on my skin." He looks at Ronan, face perplexed. It sounded like a threat. Ronan has to try not to laugh, mostly because he can imagine the conversation Shepard and Rakai had, with Shepard pretending he knows what's going on and trying to antagonize Rakai into actually telling him. "What do you mean by that?" Shepard asks. Drying off the vegetables, Ronan puts them in the steamer basket for dinner. Then he turns around and shows Shepard his arm. "A tattoo," Shepard says, then scowls. "I should have figured that out. Rakai give you that?" Ronan nods. Shepard peers at his arm, where the tattoo travels from his forearm up to the shoulder, circling both sides. "That?" He looks closer. "That's a story? It doesn't look like text." That makes Ronan smirk, and Shepard catches on immediately. "I know what the letters look like," he retorts. "That's like boxes." "You fill in the spaces," Ronan says, "and some parts of the letters." He lets Shepard grab his arm and turn it over curiously, like he can try to understand it. "How do people read it?" he asks. "They can't," Ronan says, "unless they were there and you tell them what happened." Understanding passes over Shepard's face. "It's a ritual." Ronan shrugs. "Does it hurt?" Shepard asks. "Feels like that," Ronan says, poking the unit tattoo Rakai put on Shepard's neck. "It hurts," Shepard interprets. "It was a threat." "He owes you a beating," Ronan points out, and Shepard scowls. "Milena won't let him do it till you're better." I am better, the man retorts automatically. Ronan faints like he's going to jab him in the stomach with a finger, and Shepard scrabbles backwards so fast he slams into the cupboards on the other side of the kitchen. He glares at Ronan, and then whips the fulibi stem he's still holding at Ronan's head. After 2 months, Ronan's squad is reactivated without their flight officer. It's only to escort duty, serving as little more than bodyguards to Kel and on his official state visits to various allies. Shepard pouts like a toddler about being excluded, but he still hasn't passed the health exam or the physical fitness test. Ronan doesn't think he's missing much. The assignment feels more like punishment than anything else. Like Kel wants to keep a personal eye on his unit. Non-combat escort duty pretty much guarantees Ara won't get the chance to detonate another unauthorized weapon. State visits are boring as hell. Without their flight officer, Ronan's squad has to crowd into Kel's own state transport. From this, he learns that Shepard is a better pilot than Kel's chauffeur, information he definitely keeps to himself. For his part, Kel probably learns how obnoxious and irritating Ronan's squad is when they have nothing to do and they practically have to sit in each other's laps for hours on end in a tiny, uncomfortable shuttle. Ronan's the only one with any real ability to keep his mouth shut. Shepard's pretty quiet, but he's not here. And the other four are excellent soldiers who quickly get out of control if they're not actively fighting anything. Taskmaster Kel has the rank and authority to get them to shut up, but it's an order they forget repeatedly, and Ronan doesn't remind them. He wants off this assignment as soon as possible. They shouldn't be getting punished for taking out a hive. Ronan judges that Shepard is better when they go to the training room together and Shepard can actually use the equipment without crying. They resumed their daily runs almost as soon as Shepard came home from the hospital, but it's a while before Ronan really has to pump his legs to keep up with him like usual. He's pretty sure that the only injury that would prevent Shepard from running is paralysis or leg amputations, so he doesn't take the activity as a sign that Shepard's ready for the field again. But when he spars with Shepard and the guy doesn't wiggle and ride like crazy to keep too much contact from being made with his injured torso anymore, Ronan decides he's healed enough to come back to full duty. Shepard rolls his eyes and sighs dramatically when Ronan tells him. "Finally," he says. But Ronan can tell from his posture and the set of his jaw that he's genuinely thrilled. Milena playfully pokes Shepard in the gut about 15 times the morning of his first day back. He still jerks away like he expects her touch to be agonizing, and it's amusing. "Just checking," she says, when he dances away from her and puts the kitchen table between them. The 3 months Shepard spent recovering weren't exactly wasted. Ronan's pretty sure the guy has a decent mastery of reading Satidin now. He doesn't know for sure, but Shepard has accumulated a small collection of children's learning materials and books, as well as one or two adult readings. He never asked Ronan or Milena for help, so Ronan never offered any. There's not going to be a test, but learning the language of his new home is undoubtedly a good thing. Shepard had only 2 comments about the process. The first being, "Where the hell did the vowels go?" when he switched to the teenage-level readings, and then, "Your language is ridiculous," when Milena asked how it was going. Ronan had wanted to know if Shepard was going to be able to write mission reports like the rest of the squad now. "Hell no," Shepard had said pleasantly. The squad has Shepard back, but they're still on escort duty. At least they have their own ship back, too, now. Ronan makes very sure that Shepard gets the right ship, and at no point is Kel on theirs. If Kel realizes Shepard can actually keep a shuttle level for more than 5 minutes and land without making everyone's teeth rattle, he'll transfer Shepard onto his personal staff, and Ronan is not letting him steal his flight officer. Fortunately, they only have a couple more escort missions, and Shepard never ends up flying Kel anywhere. Shepard asks Ronan about Kel one day, when they're sitting alone in the ship while the Taskmaster and the rest of the unit are off making arrangements to train with the Quastan military. Last time Ronan visited Quasta, he discovered he was incredibly allergic to some stupid purple plant that grew all over the damn planet. So he's staying in the ship, although he can still smell the stupid flower, and it's kind of making his eyes burn. Kel's pilot and Shepard are staying with the shuttles because they couldn't land anywhere close to the city, and it's protocol to leave the pilots and the ships on missions like this, just in case the friendly meeting turns less friendly, or there are unexpected wraith. So Shepard and Ronan are alone in their shuttle, looking out on the Quaston city lining the mountains. Ronan's trying to remember what Milena told him to do to make his eyes stop watering, and Shepard has his boots propped up on the console, leaning back in his seat like he's going to take a nap. But Shepard must be awake because he abruptly starts talking. Well, first he reaches out and switches the radio transceiver to a different channel, so Kel's pilot can't overhear their conversation. Ronan notices when Shepard changes the radio and stops rubbing his eyes long enough to glance over curiously. "So," Shepard drawls, "what's the story with Kel?" "He's a taskmaster," Ronan says automatically, almost sharply. This series of missions is the first time Shepard spent much time with Kel. They met briefly when Shepard first arrived on Satita, but that hardly counts. "Taskmaster, huh?" Shepard asks in the exact same tone, still mildly but pointedly curious. He takes his eyes off the windshield and looks at Ronan. "He a good guy?" Ronan understands why he turned the radio channel. If Shepard were Satidan, asking that kind of question is so far over the line. Shepard's gone back to looking at his console and fiddling with controls, even though the engine's off. He must feel Ronan's eyes on him because he reluctantly turns his face back towards Ronan. His expression is still mild and blank, like he's just asking a harmless question. "He's not Satidan," Ronan thinks. "Asking that question isn't totally different than asking how the trains work or wanting to know what he shouldn't buy from the market. Except that Shepard never asked those types of questions. He either figured it out on his own or watched Milena and Ronan till it made sense." "He's a fair taskmaster," Ronan answers honestly. "When he was younger, he had a somewhat more exalted opinion of Kel. Now, with a lot more combat experience, it's tempered a bit." "He wants to be chieftain," Ronan says, "eventually." "Kel would prefer sooner." "Ambitious," Shepard translates. Ronan shrugs. "Not what I'd want." Shepard mulls that over for a bit. "Okay," he says, "he's really fucking interested in ancestor technology." It's not quite clear how the conversation reached that point, so Ronan just nods. "You guys are doing fine without it," Shepard says, leaning further back in his seat and readjusting the way his legs are crossed. "Trust me." Ronan's squad goes back to routine missions. It's a fantastic change from escorting Kel around, and everyone's pretty much thrilled to be back to the war games and off-planet missions, even when they run into Wraith. Hell, especially when they run into Wraith. Nothing's really different, except Shepard has a few more marks on his torso that almost match the jagged scars on his back. Rakai and Marika give him a different kind of mark a couple of months later. It's not quite the beating Rakai promised Shepard. Ronan doesn't think Shepard would let him do that anyway. Let him try, maybe, but there's way too much pride there on both sides to meet a reasonable end, and Marika doesn't play that way. Ronan comes home from a master specialist meeting on an off day to find half his squad in his living room. Milena isn't home, fortunately, because she'd find this whole thing ridiculous. Shepard is stretched out shirtless on the living room floor. Marika straddles his back, pinning his right arm out and straight on the floor so Rakai can get to work on tattooing his forearm. It looks like there was a short fight. A chair is knocked over and a table pushed aside, but it was definitely for show. If Shepard really wanted to resist, he could easily send Marika flying and start a mean ground fight with Rakai. He's willing. Or he's unwilling to destroy Milena's furniture. Another possibility. "Here," is all Ronan says when he enters and takes in the scene. Marika looks up at him, grinning. Her hands are already stained with black ink, and she's leaving literal fingerprints all over Shepard's back. "It's clean," Shepard mutters, his cheek pressed against the floor. Rakai just glances at him and shrugs. He has a large straight razor in hand. The wooden needle and the striker hammer rest by his leg, a small basin of ink right next to him. Ronan looks at the needle and winces on Shepard's behalf. That right there is Rakai's vengeance for what happened on the planet that called Shepard a Wraithbringer. There's no reason to use a tip that big. "You're too hairy," Rakai tells Shepard, brandishing the razor in a way that makes Ronan mildly concerned. He's proud that Shepard doesn't show any fear. "Don't spill," Ronan tells them. He can see they laid down towels under Shepard's arm to soak up the blood. but if the basin tips, the ink will stay in the floor forever. Ronan leaves them to it, heading out of the room to clean up. While he bathes, he can hear some of the shaving process. Shepard yelps occasionally, and not surprisingly, Rakai is taunting him the whole time. That's going to get old. When Ronan finishes bathing and gets redressed, he joins them in the living room again. Shepard's arm is naked and bare from the elbow to wrist, and Rakai apparently resisted the urge to actually slash him. Two lines of tattoos circle the runner's skin right below his elbow. Shepard found something to bite on when the hammer strikes, which explains why Ronan stopped hearing his voice about halfway through his bath. There's no shame in screaming, though. Ronan knows how much it hurts. But Shepard is content with grunting into Milena's cooking mitt jammed between his teeth, and also pounding his left fist against the floor in time with the rhythm of the striking hammer. Marika keeps trying to pin his left elbow down, but she's not doing a good job of it. "Just so you know," Shepard says, spitting out the oven mitt. "Rakai, if I ever get the chance to tattoo something on you in a language you can't read, it's going to be entirely about the minuscule size of your dick." Rakai all but growls and brings down the hammer so hard, Ronan automatically puts his foot down on Shepard's shoulder to keep the man from arching too far off the floor. Shepard pants for a couple of seconds after that, through his nose, since the oven mitt is back between his teeth. Rakai yanks the needle out of Shepard's skin and leans back on his haunches. The line is done, on this side of Shepard's arm. "Wanna go?" Rakai asks Ronan. "It's my turn," Marika protests, bouncing impatiently on Shepard's back. Shepard twists in annoyance, like that really hurts. She notices and immediately stops, only to drop her hands to his shoulders and squeeze. "Try and throw me off," she dares. "Come on." Ronan kneels down next to Rakai and finds a spare cloth to wipe the blood off what he's done so far. The last line is about Shepard capturing Rakai and Ara the day they first met him. It answers questions Ronan was going to ask Rakai out of Shepard's earshot. How did he intend to write Shepard's story when they knew basically nothing of his life before about a year and a half ago? "I'll do the stuff before that later," Rakai says in response to Ronan's unasked question. He assumes Shepard will eventually tell them. "Yeah," Ronan agrees. He flips Shepard's arm over to the other side, and Marika reaches out to pin it down again. Shepard lifts his head off the floor and turns his face so he's actually looking at Ronan. "That's probably a bad idea, since watching the needle go in can make you queasy when it's your skin and your blood." He's not surprised when Shepard goes a little pale the first time he sees the blood-wet towels under his forearm. "This is so crazy," Shepard tells him, his eyes big. "Don't look," Ronan advises. Rakai doesn't give Shepard a choice, grabbing him by the head and roughly turning his face back the other direction. In return, Shepard jerks his left arm out of Marika's grip and clouts Rakai in the face, knocking him backwards. He grabs Milena's oven mitt again and shoves it between his teeth again. He keeps his face turned away from Ronan. Marika lies down across Shepard's back, using both her hands to pin his left side down. "Don't move," she complains. Rakai is sitting on Shepard's feet, probably going to do something painful and unnecessary that will make him wiggle. Ronan puts his elbow down on Shepard's bicep to keep his canvas still. He feels the needle and angles it directly below the man's elbow, preparing to write about the day he first met Shepard. "You people," Shepard moans, muffled by the homemade gag. Ronan can't identify the emotion in his voice, but it doesn't sound angry. So he raises the hammer and drives his mark deep into Shepard's skin. Ara and Hemi arrive before the night is out. Ronan lets them take their turns driving the needle. It takes a while to completely circle Shepard's forearm, and it's a good thing to let them all write Shepard's story, as they're all in it. By the end, no one's even pretending to hold Shepard down anymore. Also, they've broken into Ronan's liquor collection. The text closest to Shepard's wrist is going to be a little wobbly. Milena gets home around this time. Ronan was kind of hoping they'd be done and gone by the time she arrived. She just shakes her head, though. This isn't the first time she's come home to find the squad drunk and hurting each other, and she prefers they use her clean floor rather than the tavern. "Almost done," Ronan promises her, getting to his feet and leaning in for a kiss. Milena tastes the alcohol on his breath and pulls away. "Tell me you didn't let John drink," she says. Rakai squints at her from the floor. He's very drunk. Why not? Tastes like piss, Shepherd announces, which is his general opinion of every Satidan liquor and beer. He rarely drinks anything, unless it's being poured down his throat at the tavern. You want him to bleed out? Melena snaps, towing at the bloody cloths under Shepherd's arm. That'd be okay, Rakai mumbles, but he cowers a bit when she glares at him. Oh, right, says Ara, leaning back on her heels. She gives Melena an innocent smile. She raises the needle up. Want to finish? Melena pauses and makes an uncertain face. No, she says, I've never... She looks at Ronan for backup. You do surgery, he reminds her. That's totally different. Come on, I'll show you how. They get Melena on the floor, on her knees next to Shepherd, without much argument. Just one more letter, Hemi says, pointing at the last square of bare skin at Shepherd's wrist. I don't want to hurt him, Melena says. You gonna wash it? Ronan asks. Of course. That hurts, Shepherd mumbles in the floor. Go for it. Melena peers at him. What's in your mouth? Nothing. He turns his face down so she can't see. Ronan guides her hands, though hers are much more stable than his because she hasn't been drinking. They fill the needle together and poise it above Shepherd's wrist. You have to hit it hard with the hammer, Ronan tells her. You do not, Shepherd snaps quietly. Not that hard. Shut up, Rakai orders him. Otherwise the ink doesn't flow, Ronan says. Hit it hard. Looking intently at her work, Melena raises the striking hammer and brings it down sharply against the needle. Shepherd jerks lightly in place, then lifts his head off the floor. Hey, he said. That didn't hurt as much. He puts his head back down. I like you better. Do it harder, Ronan advises. Shepherd's been back in the field for almost 8 months when the Health Bureau finally notices he never officially passed either the physical performance test or the physical health assessment. Ronan just okayed him on the first thing, and Melena jabbed him in the stomach a couple of times with her thumbs and called it good. That should count, but it doesn't. The fitness performance test is easy. Shepherd goes to the barracks and proves that he's just as fast as he's always been on his feet or in the sky, and can hold his own in a fight, even though he's still smaller and shorter than the average Satidan soldier. But for the health assessment, he has to go to the trauma hospital and submit to a full workup. This is easy, too, except Shepherd whines about it, like they're asking him to chop off a limb. Can't you just do it here? He asks of Melena. I can, she says, which makes Shepherd grin, but it won't count. I'm not in the military. They need an officer to sign off. Shepherd's face falls, but then he glances at Ronan. A medical officer, she points out, and Shepherd starts pouting again. She's totally forged 1,000 health assessment signatures for Ronan, though, because getting checked out at a hospital can take an entire damn day, and he likes her way more than any of the military docs. Ronan's not sure that anyone ever actually reads the signature on those things, but it's not a good idea to teach Shepherd bad habits. If he got caught, they'd be a lot angrier at an alien runner than they would be at Ronan. Go, he tells him, get it over with. It does end up taking almost an entire day. Shepherd leaves in the morning with Melena, but doesn't come back until late evening. He arrives home extremely pissed off and with his arms covered in bandages from repeated blood draws. They tried to stick me in the pediatric diagnostic machine, he rants, slamming cupboards in the kitchen until he finds a stash of Aruba sticks. That stopped being funny a year ago. Ronan catches Melena slapping a hand over her mouth to hide her grin. Shepherd sees it too and glares. It's not funny, he repeats. They clear you? Ronan asks, keeping his tone neutral. Shepherd, the tiny Satidan soldier, is always going to be funny. But the man looks like he's spoiling for a fight, and Ronan just wants to go to bed, so he's not going to harp on it. Of course, Shepherd says, still scowling. He looks disappointed that Ronan isn't going to play along and help him get the aggression out. Good, Ronan says, reaching out for Melena's arm to pull her upstairs. Night. Night, Shepherd says, crankily. 5 days later, Shepherd bails on a mission. I don't think I should go out today, Shepherd says, coming into the kitchen while Ronan's eating breakfast. He's not dressed, wearing only his woven sleeping pants. He says it totally casually, but Ronan almost chokes on his juice. Why not? He asks. Shepherd wanted to go out when he was so injured a three-year-old could have dropped him. I don't feel so good, Shepherd says, his tone so mild it doesn't sound like an admission. I have a really bad headache. Headache, Ronan repeats, staring at him. Shepherd nods, one hand up, rubbing absently at his temple. You don't want to go out. I want to go out, Shepherd says, a little defensively. I just don't think it's going to be safe for me to try to take a flying Satidan tank up today, he sighs. I don't think I should fly today, he says more genuinely. Sorry. Almost instantly, Ronan's concerned. He doesn't need to be a doctor to tell that Shepherd has to feel really shitty to refuse to fly. He also never heard Shepherd complain about being hurt or sick, ever. I'm going to go back to bed, Shepherd tells him, reaching and snagging a slice of wurstel fruit off of Ronan's plate. Sleep it off. Ronan doesn't think it's an accident that Shepherd waited until Milena left the house to come to him and make this confession. He knows it isn't. Milena would have brought Shepherd to the hospital with her. Ronan's tempted to call her, but Shepherd's looking at him tensely, like he's afraid Ronan's going to do just that. I just need sleep is all, Shepherd says, I think. He's pretending like it's a hangover for Mackay's brother's birthday 2 nights ago. Ronan had left early for dinner in with Milena, but he still doesn't think Shepherd drank enough to be feeling it now. Okay, Ronan says. He doesn't blame Shepherd for wanting to wait it out. Have some Yakira's tea, he suggests, for your head. Shepherd nods, and Ronan watches him while he retrieves the satchel of little dried leaves from the cupboard and crumples them into a water boiler pot. Who you gonna get for a flight officer? Shepherd asks, waiting for the water to bubble. We can walk, Ronan says. Shepherd kind of grins, then pours himself some tea. See ya, he says, heading back to his room with cup in hand. I'm going to tell Milena if you're not better by tonight, Ronan informs him. The runner doesn't stop walking, but he does look over his shoulder long enough to shoot Ronan a dirty look. The day's mission goes fine. Simple war games with another master specialist unit. They're outnumbered, and they're on foot, but they still win. It's good practice. Ronan tells the squad about Shepherd's hangover, for which they're going to mock him mercilessly when they see him again. Shepherd's not home when Ronan returns. He finds a note on the kitchen table, Satidan glyphs, written in Shepherd's sloppy scrawl. Greetings, it says. Market for buying meat sticks and drug tea. To be feeling average now. Shepherd. Ronan has to read it a couple of times, not terribly impressed with Shepherd's new literacy, but at least he feels better, well enough to leave the house. Maybe it was a hangover. Some ales don't hit you until days later. That'll teach Shepherd to let Rakai order his drinks. Alone in the house, Ronan takes a very long bath. He rinsed off at the base, but doesn't feel clean. It's the rainy season now, and the war games all day were spent wading in mud up to his waist. Days like this, he seriously considers slicing off his dreads for how messy it can get. Milena gets home while he's in the bath. He hears her walking around the kitchen. The cupboard's opening and closing. The water is cooling around him, so Ronan reluctantly rises and starts to dry off. She barges in on him while he's patting his dreads, and she's almost as wet as he is. Hey, he says, raining? My train was late, she says, rolling her eyes. Flooded track. It floods every rain season. You'd think they'd do something. She gets distracted because Ronan grabs her and helps her take off her soaked clothing. John, she protests half-heartedly when he pulls her into the tub. He'll knock, Ronan says, or I'll kill him. Not nice, she murmurs, but it's practically into his mouth. They forget about Shepherd for a while then, until they come out of the bathroom newly clean and dry. Ronan sees Shepherd's note on the table next to the beginnings of dinner. Milena's marked it up with red corrections. It makes him smirk. Cut up the arugula steaks for me, Milena requests, tossing vegetables into the steamer. Why didn't John go out today? Hangover, Ronan says, finding the appropriate knife to start shredding the meat. Milena makes a face. You didn't warn him about Kavra ale? Ronan shrugs. He didn't ask. That gets him a dirty look. Should we wait for him? Milena wonders, watching him carve up the arugula. No, Ronan says, mostly because he's hungry. He goes to throw away the meat wrappings and notices the empty tea satchel sitting in the bottom of the garbage pail. That's kind of strange. There'd been a lot left this morning. Milena sees him staring at the garbage and comes to look too. What is it? Shepherd finished off the Yakiris, he says, dropping the meat wrappers on top of it. He said he had a bad headache. I thought you said you made him stay home because he had a hangover, Milena answers. He said he didn't feel safe flying, Ronan says honestly, because he had a hangover. He stayed home willingly? Milena is staring at him suspiciously. Ronan shrugs like it's no big deal. Yeah. She pulls the steamer basket out of the water. We're waiting for him, she says. Okay. What else did he say? Milena continues. She looks both concerned and pissed off. Headache, Ronan repeats. Didn't feel okay. He walks back to the table and finds Shepard's note. He felt better, he defends himself. Milena is still squinting at him. You should have called me. That's not like him. Ronan goes back to slicing up the aruba. He's not a kid. Milena just rolls her eyes. You both are. They wait for Shepard for only a little while. It's unsettling, mostly because Milena starts to look worried. Also, it's still pouring rain, and it's dark outside now. When did he leave? Milena asks, interrupting the silence as they sit at the kitchen table. Before I got home. Ronan pulls his chair out and stands. I'll go look for him. Milena's hands are fidgeting on the tabletop. He wouldn't have stayed at the market for 4 hours. Where are you going to look? Ronan shrugs. You said the trains are backed up. I'll come, Milena says, starting to stand up. No. Ronan doesn't need her along to make him more anxious. He already wants to smack Shepard upside the head. Just make dinner. I'll bring him back and you can yell at him then. Ronan has no idea where to look. He puts on his jacket and pulls the hood up, heading out into the downpour. The market is open all night, but most of the stalls are closed and empty. It's not some place to stay if you have a home to go to. All the same, that's where Shepard said he was going. Milena's right about the trains. They're extra slow. With the limited overnight schedule, it's actually almost faster for him to run across the city. He runs where he can until there's no more sidewalk and he has to wait for a train. The rain is not letting up at all, and he's completely soaked. The weather is cool enough to make being wet, even in his waterproof jacket, totally suck. He has no idea what Shepard was wearing when he left. The market is empty except for an after-hours cleaning crew sweeping up the floor. Ronan asks them if they've seen anyone around, gets a bunch of head shakes. A lot of Satidans know Shepard. They don't know his name or anything about him, especially not that he was a runner. But they do know that he's an alien flight officer, as he kind of stands out when the squad moves around the city. Next, Ronan catches another train and checks the tavern. It's unlikely, but it's close to the market, and maybe Shepard got the bright idea of drinking his headache away. Unsurprisingly, the building is closed and locked up tight. He heads to the base, not because he expects Shepard to be there, but because he needs to get in touch with the rest of the squad. He doesn't think any of them are with Shepard, but it's worth a try. Probably should have checked with them before he hauled his ass all over the city. Worry is itching in his chest, and Milena's probably sitting at home stewing, getting madder and madder. Ronan arrives on base really pissed off and literally squelching in his boots. His clothing and hair are soaked. It's almost early morning now. He should be exhausted, but mostly he's too tense to think about it. After alerting the squad, he's going to have to contact the security forces and send the cops to find Shepard. He doesn't have to do that. A young arms officer sees him squeezing out of his jacket and hurries over before he even makes it past the coat room. Hey, I was just about to call you. Ronan blinks at him. Why? The arms officer shoves a sheet torn off a message pad into his hands. Security forces office called. The cops picked your alien flight officer up for public drunkenness. They want someone from military justice to go get him. Where is he? Ronan asks, finding his chest suddenly light with relief. Relief and annoyance, because there's no reason he should be getting this worked up over a grown-up who can take care of himself. He lets out a breath. Detention center on the east side, the arms officer tells him, pointing at the message. Shepard has no business being over there. It's not a great area, and there's nothing there that Shepard even knows about. Ronan rolls his eyes and goes to put his coat back on. It takes a long time to get to the detention center. It's way on the other side of town, and the trains are running even more irregularly that direction. By the time Ronan gets there, the sun is actually beginning to peak above the horizon, and orange is streaking the skies. Ronan's been to a detention center a couple of times. Shepard's not the first idiot on his squad to do something really stupid. The building is black and grim, and the inside is dirty and smells. People only stay here until they go home or go to court. Flight Officer John Shepard, Ronan tells the desk receptionist. She recoils when she looks up at him. He figures he looks both really angry and really filthy, tries to give her a tight smile to show he's friendly. A security officer leads him back to the cells. He doesn't see Shepard until they get to a large, group-sized cell in the very back. It smells of alcohol and vomit, and there's a man in handcuffs lying passed out on the floor. Shepard is sitting chained to a bench against the wall, elbows propped up on his knees, and his head in his hands. "That one," Ronan says, pointing. "That one's mine." The officer unlocks the cage and enters. Ronan stays outside and watches while Shepard is unlocked from the bench and pulled to his feet. Upright, Shepard looks okay. Stubbly and tired, and really not happy, but not hurt. Sick, maybe. The officer pulls him out of the cell by the upper arm. Shepard looks at Ronan, but doesn't say anything. "You're going to take him to military justice, right?" the officer says. Ronan reaches out and grabs Shepard hard by the back of the neck. "Yep," he lies. The officer lets go of Shepard's arm and gets Ronan the arrest report before they go. The civilian security forces don't automatically transfer records to the military justice department, so when Ronan drops the paper folder in a deep puddle on their way back to the train station, no one will ever find out about this. But he reads the report before he destroys it. Some cop found Shepard, wobbly and disoriented, sitting on an out-of-service train and not getting off. He told the cop he couldn't remember how to get home and promptly got arrested. Shepard's not drunk. He smells, yeah, but not of alcohol. "What the hell?" Ronan asks when they're finally seated on the train. That's also when he lets go of Shepard's neck. "I got lost," Shepard mumbles. He glares out the window at the sunrise. "Your cops are dicks." "I think you're sick," Ronan tells him. "Am not," Shepard curls against the window. He doesn't say it very emphatically. "Maybe." Ronan takes him straight to the doctor. Home, that is, to Milena. "Oh, thank you, Rorik," she says, when Ronan pushes Shepard through the door. "John, where the hell were you?" "He got lost," Ronan reports. He shoves Shepard in her direction, and arrested. "I called you both in sick," Milena says, reaching out for Shepard's face. "Come here." "Good." Ronan wants to collapse on the couch, but he's still wet and filthy. "He probably needs to go to work with you." Milena's trying to check Shepard out, feeling his forehead and touching the glands under his ears. He's not cooperating, though, stepping just out of her reach. When she tries to grab him by the neck and pull him up, Shepard violently knocks her arms down and wrenches away. "Ow!" Milena cries. Ronan's between them in a second, staring at Shepard in shock. "Hey," he warns. "Don't touch me," Shepard snaps. He takes another step back. "I don't know who the hell you are." They end up calling an emergency medical transport vehicle to take all three of them to the hospital. In the 15 minutes it takes to arrive, Shepard repeatedly says that he doesn't know them. It's really fucking weird, and it upsets Milena, which upsets Ronan, and it's just all around awful. Shepard has to be convinced to get into the transport vehicle. He does, mostly because if he doesn't get in voluntarily, Ronan's going to make him. "Did he hit his head?" Milena asks when Shepard is settled on the patient transport board and glaring at them both like he's never seen them before. "Did the cops hit him?" "I don't know," Ronan says. The paramedics examine Shepard's skull then, ruffling his already disheveled hair. "I don't feel any bumps or lumps," one says. "No blood." They get Shepard undressed down to his underwear, not something he wants, but between the two guy paramedics and Ronan, he really doesn't have a choice. There aren't any visible injuries on his body either. One of the paramedics fingers the upraised scars on Shepard's back, and Shepard tries to launch himself off the gurney. Ronan shoves him back down to hold him and holds him there. "What are these from?" the paramedic asks. "He was a runner," Milena says. Her voice is thick, like she's going to cry. "What about these?" asks the other, pointing a gloved finger to the more recent scars on Shepard's chest and belly. "He was a runner," Ronan repeats. Milena ends up waiting with Ronan at the hospital. She gets them into the staff lounge, at least, instead of the visitor waiting room. Her colleagues kick her out of the exam room. She's a trauma doctor, after all. They could use her if Shepard had taken an axe to the head, but he hasn't. And they can't even use the excuse that he knows her, because right now, he doesn't. She interrogates Ronan while they're waiting, like she can diagnose Shepard through his answers. "He hit his head on any missions lately?" she asks. "Rakai smack him around, even playfully?" "No," Ronan says. "Yes, no." She looks at him. "No," he says. "I would have made him go in if I saw something serious. You know that." "Rorix," Milena curses. "He's been here almost 2 years, never even got a cold." Ronan nods, puts his arm around her shoulders, even though his coat sleeve is still damp. "The Wraith tracker," she says abruptly. "It was so close to his spine. Who knows what kind of poisonous shit it pumped into him?" "We don't know anything yet," Ronan reminds her. "He's not going to think about that." "Something did this to him," Milena says. "Made him sick." "Could be something that happens to his people," Ronan suggests. "He likes that better than the Wraith poisoning him." "We don't know anything about them." Milena scowls. "He's young and healthy," she says. "No one his age just gets sick like that." A gray-haired male doctor enters the lounge, clipboard in hand. "Dr. Dex," he says, approaching. Milena rises. Ronan stays seated. "What is it?" she asks. He shrugs apologetically. "Nothing obvious," he says. "Flight Officer Shepard doesn't appear to know where he is or who he is." "He deteriorated on his way here," Milena gasped. Ronan's not sure that's true. Shepard barely said a word once he was out of his cell. He might have been keeping silent because he had no idea who Ronan was. The doctor tells Milena about which blood tests they're running, stuff which goes right over Ronan's head but seems important to her. Unfortunately, the results won't be back for 48 hours. "We'll admit him," the doctor says. "Might have to put him in the psych ward, though." Milena makes a distasteful face. "I'm sorry," the guy says. "I know he's your friend, but mentally he's not on this planet." "We'll take him home," Ronan says, standing up. "He doesn't have to stay here." "No," the doc begins, but Milena interrupts. "Yeah," she says, "we can release him under my care. I can observe him at home." "Milena," the doctor says, "that's not a good idea." "Yeah, it is," Ronan says. "He hates hospitals." It probably wasn't a good idea to take Shepard home, but that's what they do. They unofficially hijack an emergency medical transport vehicle and its driver to take them back. Milena sits up front, so the guy thinks it's official business. Ronan stays in back with Shepard, except really with a guy who looks like Shepard and acts like a lunatic. The lunatic pretends like he's falling asleep on the gurney, and when Ronan lets his own eyes drift shut, Shepard slams an elbow into his jaw, swipes a knife out of one of Ronan's sheaths, and kicks the rear doors open. He jumps out of the moving vehicle and rolls down a grassy incline next to the road before Ronan can catch him. Cursing, Ronan jumps out after him. He hears tires squealing as the driver must have seen what was happening in the rear. Ronan doesn't look back, giving chase after Shepard. He doesn't have time. Shepard can outrun him, and his only chance of catching him is if Ronan gets close enough to take him down. They're both tired. Neither of them slept last night, and that's probably the only reason Ronan can even keep Shepard in sight. He chases the man underneath a bridge, through a shallow stream, and into the thick forest that stretches on beyond the highway at the edges of the city. The tangled, root-covered floor slows them both down. Shepard gets his foot caught on something, and that gives Ronan the chance he needs. He launches himself off his feet and tackles Shepard to the ground. The forward momentum sends them both rolling, but Ronan keeps fierce hold on the other man's shoulders. They end up in a tangled heap on the forest floor, but Shepard's on top of Ronan, and he's holding the knife he stole against Ronan's throat. "Hey," Ronan tries, and Shepard presses the knife harder against his skin. His eyes are wide with fear and confusion. He doesn't look like he wants to hurt Ronan, but the knife blade is cutting into him. I know you don't remember everything. You have no idea what's going on. You're confused, maybe even a little scared. I know I would be. But you have to trust me. You chased me, Shepard retorts, but he leans back a little. We're friends, Ronan tells him. I don't want you to get hurt. The things we've been through together, no disease can wipe that away, not completely. Shepard stares down at him, forehead creasing in thought, like he's trying to believe Ronan but can't. Okay, deep down, you know I'm telling the truth, Ronan says. Shepard just blinks at him, face uncertain. Give me the knife. Feeling a little safer, Ronan shifts on his elbows like he's going to sit up. Instantly, the knife is tight against his throat again. Oh, nice try, Shepard snarls. Ronan drops, flat on his back in the dirt again. Exasperated, he doesn't try to convince Shepard that he's gone crazy. Another minute of getting his breath back, he can wrestle the knife away. Fine, he snaps, then kill me. Then you'll be all alone in the middle of the forest with no idea who you are, where you're going, or what you're going to do next. How could I possibly make it any worse? Abruptly, Shepard sits back on his haunches, the knife pulled away from Ronan's throat. He considers that statement, while Ronan thinks about starting a ground fight. That's a good point, Shepard mumbles, throwing Ronan's knife into the dirt, blade first. He climbs off Ronan's hips and stays sprawled on the ground next to him. Slowly, Ronan sits up. Want to go home? He asks Shepard, taking his knife and putting it back in its sheath. Shepard stares at him. I don't know where home is, he says. The emergency medical transport vehicle is waiting for them on the side of the highway where Shepard had bolted. Milena sits on the guardrail, her face pale and panicky. Ronan can see her take a huge sigh of relief when he and Shepard appear through the trees. I didn't think you could catch him, Milena whispers as they escort Shepard back to the rear. Of course I can, Ronan replies. He ties Shepard to the patient gurney with the restraint straps for the rest of the journey home, though. He doesn't think Shepard remembers running or surrendering. In another 15 minutes, Shepard is asking Ronan who he is and where they're going. He's suspicious and paranoid, more so now because he's tied up, too. We're going home, Ronan tells him. Why am I tied up? Shepard demands. Because you tried to run away. Ronan leans back against the wall of the vehicle. He's completely exhausted. Why'd I run away? Shepard asks. I don't know. Who are you? Your friend. Shepard pauses for a while, as if out of questions. Then, who am I? My friend. They move Shepard's bed into the main room, afraid he'll go out his bedroom window if they let him alone in there. He falls asleep in it, though it's the middle of the day and all the lights are on. On top of the sheets, after only a few questions about where he is and what they're doing to him. He's exhausted, Milena whispers from the kitchen where she's finally making dinner from last night. I know. Ronan's exhausted too. Hungry too. He walks over and leans against the wall nearest her. I called the base, Milena said. Told him we're under quarantine, and you and Shepard won't be reporting for duty for the next few days. Ronan blinks at her. Quarantine? She shrugs. He has a fever. That means he has some kind of infection. It might be contagious. Now there's something he hadn't thought of. You think? I think if it is, we're already exposed, Milena says. We live together, share food. Ronan nods. The squad, the cop who arrested Shepard, and whoever was sharing a cell with him have also probably been exposed. So yeah, Milena says, quarantine till the results come back. And then? Milena looks down at the steamer basket full of vegetables and shrugs. I've never seen anything like this, Ronan. The next 2 days suck. Ronan's paranoid for himself, waiting to be struck with a headache and start to lose his mind. It doesn't happen, and when he checks with Milena, she claims to feel fine, too. Shepard does not feel fine. They take turns watching him, like guard duty. It's better when he's sleeping. When he's awake, he's paranoid, unhappy, and trying poorly to hide his terror. He's not aggressive anymore, though. Ronan doesn't worry about Milena watching him. Their friend has no short-term memory. No matter how many times they tell him his name, their names, and that he lives there, Shepard forgets within a half hour or so. And then he starts up with the same line of questions. It's annoying as all hell, and also frighteningly sad. I don't think I belong here, Shepard tells Ronan, utterly sincerely, the following afternoon. Yeah, you do, Ronan replies. You live here. I don't think so. Well, you do. Shepard paces the confines of the living room, while Ronan watches from the couch. This isn't my home. Yeah, it is. He's had the same conversation with Shepard about 14 times. Milena had it another 30 that morning. I think I belong somewhere else, Shepard says. He looks at the front door, which is locked and bolted. We're all you got, buddy, Ronan says. Sit down. Slowly, Shepard obeys. He sits next to Ronan, but with a lot of space between them. Read a book, Ronan suggests. He tosses one of the children's books at Shepard. Stop looking at the door. You aren't going anywhere. Shepard catches the book and opens it. He glances at the pages, then closes it. I can't read this, he tells Ronan. I don't know this language. He scowls. I knew this isn't my world. You're a liar. It's your world now, Ronan says, having had this argument too many times today to try to convince Shepard of it again. Look at the pictures. Dr. Hexarl said he'll call as soon as the results are in, Milena tells Ronan when they switch off guard duty after dinner time cleanup. The morning, if he can. Good, Ronan says. He figures Milena hates this as much as he does. You know, Milena says, tilting her head at where Shepard is bedding down. There's one good thing about this. Ronan stares at her, disbelieving. What? He sleeps through the night, Milena says. He doesn't scream anymore. He doesn't wake up. Because he doesn't remember, Ronan says. That's not good. Milena shrugs. I know, she says, but I wouldn't mind if those memories are gone for good. Milena shrugs. I know, she says, but I wouldn't mind if those memories are gone for good. Ronan disagrees. He knows Shepard would, too, even though he's lying still and slumbering in the living room. However awful the memories are, the ones that make him shriek and arch awake every night, they're part of Shepard's life and among all that he has left of his world. However awful the memories are, the ones that make him shriek and arch awake every night, they're part of Shepard's life and among all he has left of his world. Dr. Hexarl calls the next day at lunch, contacting Milena on her hospital transceiver that's been sitting ominously on the table all day. Milena answers and listens intently, silently, for a few minutes. Are you serious? She interrupts, looking shocked. Ronan watches her, waiting. She sounds surprised, but not upset, like the doc didn't just give Shepard a death sentence. I'll bring him in right away, she promises. Send another hospital vehicle, please. She turns off the transceiver and lowers it from her ear. Curison fever, she tells Ronan. Can you believe it? He stares at her. Adults don't get that, he says, and they don't get like that. He points where Shepard is surveying the living room with suspicion. Satidan adults don't get that, she replies. It was only a matter of time before he was exposed to something he didn't have immunity to. Maybe this is what happens when adults get Curison fever. Ronan shakes his head, unbelieving. I had it when I was 10, he says. It was just the flu. The hospital got a family in from the Coralis colony, Milena says. The children had a new strain of Curison fever. Shepard must have been exposed when they were teasing him in the pediatric ward. She makes a face. Hey, there's a patch of venturi plant growing outside by the curb. Would you go pick it all? Aren't you going to give him a shot? Ronan asks. Milena nods. It can't hurt to make him eat some, she says. Ronan waits a second, just looking at her. One of the Coralis colony children died. So Ronan jerks a handful of venturi plant up out of their tiny yard. Milena washes it, puts it in a bowl with some oils and a dash of spices, and they give it to Shepard as a salad. He eats it, slowly and resentfully, while they wait for the hospital vehicle to arrive. At the hospital, Shepard gets a whole IV bag full of venturi extract and spends the next day unconscious. Milena and Ronan stay the night in the empty gurney on the other side of the room, waiting for him to wake up. When he finally does, it's a huge relief to see recognition in his eyes when he looks up at them. "Hey," Ronan says. "Hi, John," Milena says, patting his hair until he pulls away. "How long have I been asleep?" Shepard asks, sounding like his usual self. "A day," Ronan tells him, to which he makes a face. "How's your memory?" Milena asks, though Ronan can tell just by the way he's looking at them. "I know who you are," Shepard says, "and I know who I am, and I know where I am, and I know I want to go home." "Good enough," says Ronan, reaching out to pluck off Shepard's IV. Eager to leave, Shepard gets dressed quickly, and Milena speeds up the discharge process. "Can I kill those guys in pediatrics?" Shepard asks as they walk down the hospital corridor. "Sure," says Ronan. "No," Milena says. "I'll take care of it." "We have to go to work tomorrow?" Shepard asks Ronan when they arrive home. "I haven't told them you're out of quarantine yet," Milena says. "Good," Shepard nods. "I know I just slept for a day, but I feel like I need to do it for a whole week." "Me too," Ronan says. "My bed is in the living room," Shepard observes, tilting his head. "We had to watch you," Ronan tells him. "You kept wanting to leave." "Not so much," Shepard says, stripping the sheets off and picking up his mattress. He carries it off toward his bedroom. "Good night." "Sleep well," Milena calls after him. Ronan and Milena go to bed shortly after that. It's been a long, hard, and awful few days. He's going to ask Milena not to mention Shepard's better for a while, though eventually the squad is going to show up at their door. Ronan's almost asleep when his wife elbows him lightly in the side. "Huh?" He rolls his head toward her. "What?" "Hear that?" Milena whispers. Ronan does. It's Shepard, screaming.